Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we, of course, bring you new guests to discuss exciting new aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. And UFOs, I have to say, are really my favorite subject of all the unexplained stuff. I mean, I love out-of-body experiences. Ghosts are very interesting, but there's something about UFOs that just really grabs my attention. So I'm very, very excited about our subject tonight, which is UFOs over Catalina Island. Now, I began doing UFO research, let me see, in 1988. And almost immediately, I started getting reports of UFO activity off the coast of Southern California, here where I live. It wasn't long before I started getting reports of actual underwater UFO activity. They call these USOs. And I've written a number of books since then, and in one of my latest books, UFOs Over California, I wrote a chapter outlining some of this USO activity. And it just really took off. I wrote an article about this, and I started getting a lot more information from other people. And this eventually led to an appearance on the History Channel with the program Deep Sea UFOs, which turned out to be one of their most popular episodes ever. They called me back for another episode, and then on to UFO Hunters, where we talked about it more. And so I've been just given an avalanche of information about USO activity off the coast of Southern California. And it seems to be mostly centered around Catalina Island. I'm not exactly sure why, but this is where most of the reports are coming from. And I'm getting all the entire range of reports. Reports of tiny little UFOs coming in and out of the water. Reports of UFOs as large as stadiums, extremely large UFOs. I've got reports of multiple objects coming out of the water. And these are not just sightings some of these people are having. Some of these people are having very extensive experiences. And so there is definitely something about this area that is generating a lot of USO activity. And actually, my theory is that there is some sort of an underwater base. And I'll get to that a little later. But what I'd really like to do now is introduce our guest tonight. Our guest tonight is Jonathan Fox. He is an actor and a writer. He actually had a role on the TV series Fame and has been on a number of other programs as well. And he was one of the people who sent me an email after seeing me on the History Channel. And he has an amazing story to tell about his own UFO experience on Catalina Island. And that's what we're going to be talking about mostly tonight. Now, this is a call-in show, so if any of you would like to call in and ask a question of our guests or contribute some information, there is a toll-free number. It is 888-228-4494. I'll repeat that once again so you can grab a pencil. It's 888-228-4494. But yes, our guest tonight is Jonathan Fox, and he had an amazing experience on Catalina Island. What's so amazing about his experience is he wasn't alone, for one thing. He was with a group of his friends, a large group of friends, nearly a dozen of them. And also, it's one of the most extraordinary sightings that I've ever heard. It's just most sightings are pretty brief and simple. You know, someone sees a light in the sky and it goes away. Well, this sighting lasted for over an hour, probably closer to 2 hours or more, just has levels to it that are still being uncovered today. So it's a very interesting story, and I'm very, very excited to have Jonathan on as a guest. So we are all very blessed by his presence. And Jonathan, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I remember when you first contacted me with your email, I'm like, wow, here's another sighting. What is going on with this area?
You know, seeing that show, seeing your appearance on that show was such a turning point for me in regard to this whole subject, because over all the years. Now it's 28 years, I think, since it happened. Almost 28 years. You know, it was not something that was discussed a great deal, except perhaps amongst ourselves, amongst our, you know, own group. And we started at 11, and now we're down to 8, I think, because so many years have gone by.
Nice.
But seeing you on that show and listening to you, I think I told you when I emailed you originally, I was like sleeping. I had my eyes closed, and I was just listening to the program in the background, and I heard you talk about Catalina Island, and my eyes opened, and I bolted upright in bed, because when this happened, it was actually 1982, you know, it wasn't common for people to have computers in their homes and access to the Internet 24/7, so doing any research that we did do afterwards on the subject was kind of slow and laborious compared to what we can do today. And I had never done that research and looked for other information about Catalina, except very briefly, right at that time. So hearing you bring up that subject after all the years and then talking about other people who had similar experiences in the same place that we had all those years ago really just set off a lot of, I don't want to say alarms, but it resonated very heavily with me, obviously, to the point where I wrote down your name, I Googled you, and I contacted you to say, wow, you're talking about something that happened to me and a group of my friends quite a long time ago on Catalina Island. It was a rather dramatic kind of experience. And I think I, you know, made that clear to you originally, because it wasn't. Now I'm so interested in the subject, but now if somebody says, "Oh, I saw a UFO," yeah, this thing, you know, flew across the sky, I'm not impressed at all, because we had such a dramatic experience that if I get to ever have anything like it again, it's going to have to supersede that in some way, because I'm not interested in lights in the sky. I want to see the real deal now at this point. I've had too good a taste of it. I was thinking of you earlier, knowing that you were going to call me, because, as you know, I've just moved to the Catskill Mountains, which
right.
is in the Hudson Valley in upstate New York. And it turns out, I did not know before I made my plans to move here, but it turns out this is a huge UFO flap area, and there's a great interest in the subject up here. And just when I was out earlier, about an hour ago, 4 helicopters came overhead, and for me to say this is unusual, I'm not in Los Angeles any longer. And for an helicopter, much less 4 helicopters, to be in the area in the middle of the woods, out in the middle of nowhere, is really an extreme rarity. And it was just about an hour ago. I'm like, what's going on in the sky that I don't know about? Because I'm highly attuned at the moment, I guess, because I knew I was going to speak with you.
Right. Well, having an experience like you had does transform a person, I think.
Well, it certainly did. It obviously did. You know, we were all, I don't want to say young and impressionable, but it was such a startling experience and so hard to explain away, impossible to explain away. And there were so many of us. We were such a varied group of people. There were 11 of us all together. And some of us, I would have to say myself included, was kind of embracing the experience when it happened, but there were quite a few of us who were not embracing any of it and didn't want it to be happening and wanted to explain it away in any way possible. Our experience lasted over 2.5 hours, and at some point it seemed like it was never going to end, and then it almost seemed like it never happened all at the same time, as odd as that may sound. Because we were a group of 11 people going for a camping trip on Catalina Island. It was not our first time. We had been going as a group for several years up to that point, and we had made a tradition of going on July 4th weekend for a 3-day weekend camping in the middle of the island where it's very desolate. Most people go camping on Catalina. You don't want to go to the beach camping and be near the water. Where we went is up on Blackjack Mountain. It's very isolated. And you either hike in or get your gear brought in, and they dump you off, and they don't come back for 3 days. There's no one up there, and there is nothing around. But the beauty of that is the same. There's no one there, so you can really enjoy, you know, being on top of the island. You can see around the island 360 degrees, which is amazing, and you can see Long Beach from up there. You can see LAX. because these were things that came up very quickly. We went up there to have this three-day weekend, and every year, Preston, we had a theme for that weekend. We were in our 20s, and we did wild parties, and we had a Close the Clash cocktail party, and we had a neo-romanticism party, and we had a Salute to Mother's Day party once. And this particular trip on July 3rd, 1982, was a salute to E.T., because the movie had just come out.
Right.
And we thought that that would be a cool theme for our party. And we brought all sorts of party goods with us, party favors. We all had blinking lights that we wore around our necks to represent, you know, E.T.'s heartbeat. We put together a communicator like E.T. does in the film, where he gets all these common household objects and puts them together to communicate with his lost loved ones. And we put all these common household objects together and wired it together. We just had a great time. We were enjoying ourselves thoroughly and living out our theme. We had little stars on our heads on springs, and, you know, we did the whole nine yards. And as the sun was setting on the very top of Catalina Island, up by the pergola there, they have a wine stop that you hikers can stop at and look at the sunset from up there, and you can see very clearly. All this fog, immense fog, started to roll in, and we're listening to the music of Star Wars, I think, and doing our E.T. phone home thing. We put together the communicator. This intense, intense fog came in. It was the beginning of really what was so dramatic about it all, because unless you've been to Catalina and experienced something like the marine layer coming in, we're a couple thousand feet above it, so everything gets blanketed underneath you. And it rolled in very, very thickly with this dramatic music going on, and the sun was setting. And,
did you say the fog was unusual? I mean, was it?
I've never seen anything like it before, and certainly we have seen fog many times on Catalina. That's not unusual to get fog all over the coast there. But I had never experienced anything like it, and it came in so intensely that it was like up to our knees. We were about 1,800 feet up, I think.
Right.
And so the fog was, fairly low, and it obliterated all of Avalon down below. If anybody was in town or on the island anywhere other than where we were and looked up, all they would see was cloud. And all we could see was cloud looking down. So it was kind of intense, you know. It was kind of intense. And we were all off in different groups listening to our music and partying and having a good time, watching the beautiful, beautiful sunset. And one of the girls, way off in the distance, there were a couple of girls grouped together, and one of the girls started screaming, "Look, here they come, here they come, here they come." And I was standing talking with a friend, and we kind of turned. I could see her in silhouette. I could see it as if it were yesterday. And they were standing far off, pointing up in the sky, and I'm like, what on earth are they yelling about? So we went traipsing off in their general direction, and by then a few more of the people in our group had gotten together, and they were all looking in the same direction and pointing, and I looked with my friend to see where they were pointing, and there were these three lights in the sky.
Which direction?
We were looking, the sun was then behind us. If the sun was setting to our left, which was the west, we would have been looking like northeast. So about semi-northeast, because we took about a quarter turn from the sunset to see what they were pointing at. And where they were pointing was almost over the airport at Catalina. And so, of course, we thought it was planes landing. Planes can't land on Catalina Island after sunset. That's when the very last planes can land there.
It's a tiny little runway.
I think it's the shortest runway in the United States.
I think so,
and a dangerous one. There are accidents, unfortunately, up there all the time. So, naturally, that was our inclination, was that these, you know, there were little planes coming in at the last moment. There was a difference in size between these lights that we were looking at. So we were trying to figure it out, saying, oh, is it planes landing at the airport? The airport is directly across from where we're camping. So, if it had been, they would have landed. They would have actually landed within a matter of moments. But instead, they seemed to just be getting brighter and brighter and brighter and coming closer and closer to us over the water between Catalina and Long Beach.
Okay.
these lights were over the water. I don't know how high. I'm really bad with that kind of thing. If we were 1,700, 1,800 feet up, I don't think they were more than another, I don't know. I don't know, 500 feet above us.
Were they at eye level?
No, but just above eye level.
Okay.
And so we started kind of getting excited as a group because minutes were passing and they weren't landing, and we could see LAX. So we could see planes landing and taking off from LAX, actually from that vantage point on the island. These lights were much, much closer to us than that. And it started to go on for a period of time. And we were, enough time for us to look amongst ourselves and say, what is that that we're looking at? Is it a campfire? Is it a boat? Is it a plane? Is it a helicopter? Is it LAX? Is it the Catalina Airport? We had time to go over and, oh, is it flashlights? You know, why are we seeing this? Is that land? Is it in the air? And
right, there's 11 of you, right?
There were 11 of us, so there were a lot of eyes looking and a lot of speculation going back and forth. At least one or two people suggesting that maybe it was something that we couldn't identify, which, of course, got me kind of excited. Since apparently I was the one who put together the ET party, so I was like, oh, I had no idea we'd get this good, you know. we had all these lights that we wore around our necks as party favors,
right?
And we had actually taken them and laid them on the ground in a huge circle, blinking up into the sky before all of this happened.
You know, I wonder if that might have even attracted them, because I've heard of other cases just like that, by the lights alone.
Somebody at that time threw that out as a theory at us when we reported it originally to the Mutual UFO Network. Somebody did suggest that that was a possibility. These were highway flashers, is what they were made for. When your car breaks down, they have flat cadmium batteries in them and a little tripod, and you stand it up on the freeway, and it blinks 2.5-3 miles. You can see it. So apparently you can see it blinking 2.5 miles up into the atmosphere as well.
Right.
Which is, you know, why we laid them down there, but never really expecting to get a response. So I don't know if that's the case or not, but we had done it, and they were blinking, and they were laid in a circle flat on the ground pointing up, so I suppose that's a possibility. I, you know, to this day have no idea what it was that we experienced. We only know it as we experienced it.
Right.
You know, the lights continued to get closer and closer to us, not quickly, just brighter and larger and larger, and there were three of them distinctly. One in the center was quite a bit larger. And the two on the sides, which we entertained the thought, could it be like headlight with two side light kind of things? You know, we were really trying to dissect it. But it seemed that all three were independent. But the two on the sides always remained smaller than the one in the middle. They got closer and closer until there started to be some concern in the group, because by now we had probably been discussing it for 15 minutes. And they weren't going away, and they weren't landing, and they were getting closer, and we still didn't know what it was. And there started to be just a little bit of like, you know, come on, guys, really, what's going on? Now it seems a little weird.
Well, one guy there had a camera, right?
We had flashlights, cameras, trying to think what else we had, battery operated.
You had that phone that you
brought watches.
Up.
I'm sorry?
You had that phone that you brought
we
up.
Did
as a gimmick.
We did have a phone. Once again, it was 1982, and nobody had cell phones. None of us had cell phones. Cell phones weren't around. But somebody had taken a phone from their home and unplugged it from the wall and brought it as a part of the theme of E.T. Phone Home. So he spent all his time at our, and we all dressed up, you know, in these outfits, and he spent all his time with his phone saying, phone home, phone home. We had the phone, we had the communicator going. At some point, somebody went over and turned off the music because the fog was coming in so heavily, and the excitement in the atmosphere was rising a little bit. People were starting to get a little bit concerned, and there was a little bit of adrenaline going there for a couple of minutes, so I think we turned off the music, and it was completely dark at that point because when we went to turn on our flashlights, we had no flashlight power. and somebody went to take a picture and had no battery power in the camera. And that kind of amped it up another notch because we started to get a little creeped out, you know. The fog is at our kneecaps. We feel completely isolated from the entire world at this point. It's dark. Our flashlights have died. These strange lights are in the sky. We've got this blinking communicator thing and these flashing lights blinking up. They were blinking away, the cadmium batteries.
All your flashlights died?
Yeah. Nobody had a flashlight working at that time, as I recall, because we did wind up sending our batteries. Once it was all over and we discovered who the Mutual UFO Network was and the Center for UFO Studies, we did want to report it or investigate it in some way, and one of them asked for our batteries, and they were sent to them for analysis because they considered that, I think, a close encounter of the second kind, actually, because there was some residual, something left behind that had been altered.
Right.
That's when we started to learn about all of those things. We didn't really know what we were doing at the time. So it again, the whole thing kind of amped up a notch. And as I said, at the risk of sounding sexist, I tend to want to say that the women in the group became more upset more readily than the men. That may not be entirely true. There were some tears on some men's parts as well. But I think the girls got kind of a little more excited in a frightened way more quickly than some of the others. Actually, I mean, for me, a lot of it is very insular. You know, I remember it as my own experience, even though I was in a group of other people. We all were going through such intense emotions at that time that it's hard to not see it on a very personal level.
Right.
And to stand back from it and look at it. But I do recall people starting to get really upset. And when that happened, it seemed simultaneous with that. When the group got most upset as a group, these three lights in the sky stopped approaching and just hovered in the air over the water between us and Long Beach, much closer to Catalina than Long Beach. But they stopped getting any closer or any brighter, and we all took note of that.
Huh. You felt that that was more than coincidence then?
You know, we talked about it then because we already were kind of like something weird and otherworldly is going on. We had no idea what it was. You know, I can't say I saw a flying saucer. You know, we don't know what we saw, but we were entertaining the thought that there was a possibility that there was a connection between those two things.
Could you tell how close they were at this point? How close?
You know, no, I'm not. I'm so not good at that. But the walk, the hike in from the road is like 2.5 miles. So I would say they were probably within a mile of us at that point. The center one was much brighter. We could distinguish actual individuality on its part. It looked like, hard to say, but it looked like either there were lights going around the center ball that we were looking at, or it was turning, and lights on it were turning, but we could actually see some sort of oscillation going on.
Okay.
And when they stopped, and we all kind of stopped with it and really just, you know, took stock of the situation, by now this had been going on for a while, even though we really didn't have a good sense of time and weren't paying attention to it. This had clearly gone on for a while. It really had our attention. We all stopped as a group and just looked at these three objects in the sky, and out of the center one came a little, you know, dramatic sci-fi movie kind of beam of light that made us all gasp and or scream, and this little beam of light went out to one of the lights to the side, one of the smaller ones.
Right.
And then out of that smaller light, another beam of light came from that and went to the big one, and kind of all hell broke loose. We were like, what on earth is going on? Because it was, again, you know, using the word dramatic, but it was like being in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, being in the film.
Right.
And none of us at that point could discount the fact that something totally bizarre was happening. And we kept, you know, checking in with each other to make sure that we weren't actually, you know, having a mass hallucination. because from that point on, it started for a little while with these little lights going back and forth between these three objects and giving us an actual light show a la Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And there was crying and a little bit of screaming and kind of some awestruck stuff going on.
Well, Jonathan, let me interrupt you for just a second because I think we have a caller on the line, actually. Caller, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Jonathan. It's Meg.
Hi.
Did you guys hear anything as all this was going on? Could you hear something moving or, I don't know,
nothing.
Whooshing or
no
whatever?
Sound whatsoever. No,
oh, okay.
No sound at all.
Did, like, the quality of the air change, or were there any physical, I mean, aside from the terror level, any physical kind of, you know, feeling?
Yes, but we don't know what it's to be attributed to, because we were all freezing cold. The fog had rolled in, the sun had set, but we all had kind of goosebumps and hair on our neck and teeth chattering, kind of cold. It's been suggested that that's a symptom of shock, you know, so that we had gone into some kind of shock mode, because when it all ended, the temperature rose. It seemed like it rose 10 or 15 degrees and immediately got warm as soon as the whole event was over. So there was that physical kind of thing going on. But it's interesting that you ask, because I've never thought about the sound aspect of it once. The only time that sound changed it is at the very end when there was intervention on the part of the United States Air Force. We heard them.
Right.
We heard them coming long and hard, you know.
But no.
Great show, gentlemen. Enjoying it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
So,
an interesting question, and it's so odd that I never thought about it, just like I never thought about the fact that they could have come out of the water until I saw your show on USOs. That also never occurred to me.
Right. Well, that's what makes this, I mean, your experience is so interesting. I mean, there's so many levels.
Well, you know, it got even more intense after that, Preston, because while we were oohing and aahing over, like, these lights going back and forth, and that went on for however long that it did, out of the bottom of the middle thing, whatever it was, from the bottom fell three other distinct objects that appeared. It's funny because I had never read those other MUFON reports that the other people had done until just recently when you and I were in contact, and everybody described it all the same way, and it was really so interesting to go back 20-some-odd years and look at these handwritten reports that we had all filed with MUFON, and to see that they were all so similar was very, very striking, you know, after decades.
Right,
but
right.
To my eye, and the way that I described it, it looked like three diamond-shaped mirrors. Maybe to the eye, like an inch high. If I held my hands up, you know, to them in the sky, they look like diamond-shaped mirrors, and it's only just the best way I can describe it. They look like they were sparkling, spinning, reflecting light. I don't know what they were. Three of them fell out of this middle craft or ball of light, whatever it was. We all saw it all at the same time. We all gasped as one. Gasped. And turned to each other saying, did you see that? Did you see that? Did you see that? So they kind of floated out into the air. They fell out of the, it looked like they fell out, but they didn't continue falling. They floated up in the air, and they were spinning or twinkling or whatever the heck they were doing, and shot around us and kind of encircled where we were on the island while sheer pandemonium ensued. Because at that point, we just all lost it, and there was literally screaming and hysteria going on, because it looked like there was something, you know, totally weird zipping around us that fell out of this thing that we've been looking at for an hour or whatever it was. That really was the point that pandemonium ensued. There was a lot of crying, as I recall, and a lot of excitement, and us kind of standing up and turning around saying, what's going on? We could actually see the cloud bank, the fog bank being lit up by whatever it was. We couldn't see. I could no longer see diamond-shaped things in the sky. It was just all fog all around us. We could, I don't know if we could hear it going. I don't recall hearing anything, but we could see the light lighting up the fog as it actually, I'm doing it with my hand while we're speaking, circled around.
Now,
you know, if you hold a cigarette up in the air and turn it around in a circle, that's what it looked like. It lit up the fog as it went 360 degrees around us.
Well,
How close to you would you say at this point?
That was a very close proximity to us. I would have to say, 2 football fields away, maybe.
Okay. So kind clearly, I mean,
us.
At this point, it must have been apparent to all of you guys that these objects were interested in you, or at least observing you, or interacting
with
you.
At that point, I was 100% sure we were going to, like, meet alien beings any moment, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty clear to us that there was something really wild and dramatic going on, and it was going on for us. It certainly seemed like it was for us, yeah, because we realized that nobody in Avalon, and we kept saying so, if somebody in Avalon looked up in the sky, they would not be seeing any of this, because everything was completely socked in.
Well, were you saying UFOs at this point? I mean, had you pretty much dropped the plane theory?
Yes, we had enough time to eliminate all theories. One of the guys in the group was like an engineer almost, and taking a very scientific approach to it and really not wanting it to be something he couldn't explain. We all had kind of a different tact on it. My tact at that point was that, you know, it's a UFO. There was really no other way to explain it. It had outlasted any other explanation, really, in a way, you know, because so much time had gone by and so much had happened, and these lights and then the thing falling out of it and zipping around. And at that point, one of the women in the group said, "I can't take it anymore. Get me out of here," to her husband. And she said, "Take me back down to, you know, our base camp and get me away from here." At that point, we certainly were entertaining the thought that it was some sort of UFO activity, because I turned to her and said, "How could you possibly leave while this is going on? You can't leave. We don't know what's going to happen next." And she said, I got to go. And she and her husband did go down and leave the group, so that left 9 of us there. And they went down and hiked back to our camp, which was not far away. She was very, very, very upset.
This was as the lights were circling around you?
Yeah, that's pretty much when that all came down, when she said, "I got to get out of here right now." She became, we were all quite frightened, really. You know, we were scared. I had so much adrenaline going, I was really, really excited. But we were scared because we were kind of running around the top of this island like headless chickens in the pitch dark with these 3 things lighting up the sky, things falling out of them. You know, the drama really just did not let up.
Right.
It did not let up. And we were pretty much in UFO mode. And our friend David, who had brought the phone with him from home for his ET phone home prop, was holding out the phone in the direction of these 3 objects, holding the phone out, crying, as I recall. We were all very emotional, and pressing the push buttons on the phone, saying, you know, "Phone home, phone home, phone home," pressing the buttons and pressing the buttons. And he stopped pressing the buttons, and the phone responded by making tones. When you use a push button phone, at least... No, it still does it, I think. If you dial, like, a long-distance number on a push-button phone and then hit send, you hear beep, 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 as
right.
It's putting through the number. And that's exactly what the phone did. It was phone tones, you know, just like the phone would normally make, although it wasn't a cell phone, it wasn't a wireless phone, it was just a phone unplugged from the wall. But it did do that. It went beep, 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 beep.
It had no
We were all sitting on the ground on that point, because in slow motion, literally, like in a film, I'm telling you, it's hard to not say it like a movie script, because it was so... vivid, but all of us, all 9 of us, turned inward toward him where he was holding out the phone, and he was staring out with this, you know, amazed look on his face saying, "Did you hear it? Did you hear it?" And we all heard it. We all corroborated it, and once more, it kind of amped up a notch because this had happened. There was no explanation whatsoever for that phone making sounds, and to us, for a moment, yeah, I would have to say that we were like, yeah, they're communicating with us. Whoever it is communicating with us electronically and messing with our heads.
It had no batteries or anything
No, no. I still have the phone. No, it was a really funky phone from the 70s that had like a leatherette casing on it. It looked very high-tech, but has to plug into a regular, you know, line. For a phone, it doesn't have any batteries of any kind whatsoever.
You know, what's interesting is I've talked to several people who've had very similar experiences like that. And
in what way?
Well, with their cell phones,
reacting very strangely in the presence of a UFO, and even, you know, calling them up and hearing, you know, strange voices, you know.
Oh, that would have amped it up yet another notch. Undoubtedly, it was enough for us that the phone was beeping because it flipped us out. It absolutely flipped us out.
Right.
And once again, we were like just dumbstruck, just flat out dumbstruck. At that point, somewhere along that line, we started to hear a low rumbling in the sky. There was a low rumbling in the sky. It felt almost like thunder. It was kind of dramatic. We were cold. Our teeth were chattering. These lights are in the sky. All this stuff has gone on. The phone is beeped. The lights are still blinking from the batteries, blinking up into the sky, and our little communicators blinking away and pulling in the wind where we attached it to a tree, just like E.T. did. And I turned to the group. We were all pretty much shell-shocked at that point, I think, because I recall turning to the group and saying, here it comes. This has been leading up to all this time. I've seen the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. This is it. You know, this thunderous sound, thunderous. And I literally could feel the ground vibrating under us. It just was this incredibly, incredibly loud, thundering sound. And we could, as a group, suddenly tell that it was coming from behind us, because we all, as a group, kind of turned around to see what was making this incredible sound. I, of course, am fully expecting the mothership of all motherships to come over the horizon on Catalina Island. I'm ready. I said, I'm ready to go. You know, tell the dog I'm sorry. I'm ready to go. But I was one of very few who was ready to go. There was a lot of yelling and commotion going on. As we turned around to see the source of the sound, United States aircraft comes up over the horizon, shooting toward what we had been looking at all this time. And the reason that the sound was so loud and so intense and the ground seemed like it was shaking was that this aircraft was like 100 feet over our heads. It was so low, it was like standing on a tarmac when a jet is landing. And we could see USAF on the bottom of the plane. We could see the letters clear as day. And could actually feel it, you know, whooshing above us. And, of course, because it was an Air Force jet of some sort, it all happened very quickly. Once it came up over the horizon and we had heard the sound and identified it, it was shooting over our heads. All at the same time, kind of dramatic. And so we turned with it as it shot over our heads in the direction of these three lights. And as that was happening, as the Air Force jet was basically over our heads, the three lights we were looking at descended beneath the cloud layer, beneath the fog layer, and under the marine layer, and the jet just shot off. It went right past, you know, where they were, all within seconds. You know, this jet came zooming over us. They went down under the fog layer, and the jet kept zooming and was gone. And it was over just as quickly as it had begun. These three lights sank under the fog layer. Once again, it never occurred to me, ever, until this year, that they could possibly have kept going down. Never occurred to me, because I never thought of UFOs as something that would be in the water, ever. But as soon as they were gone from our eyesight, and the jet was out of sight, and the sound was fading away, either the temperature went up, or our body temperatures went up immediately. But one of the two happened, because it was palpable. You could actually feel the change in the atmosphere. So, you know, a lot of suggestions have come my way over the years in researching this, the little that I've done. But it is, I guess, possible that the air actually was charged, because there was such a distinct feeling between what had gone on for what turned out to be a long period of time and it ending. It was very dramatic, like dropping the lid on a box.
Well, if you were all in shock, I mean, then that wouldn't be an explanation because you would still be, you know, shivering after the experience. Shock.
This is what I've heard.
That.
Yeah, this is what I've heard. Again, you know, if it happened today, I'd be able to find out so much more about something like that so much more quickly. But yes, the temperature did appear to go up. I would say 15 degrees easily. We went from freezing cold to warm. It was July 3rd on Catalina Island. It was quite warm. We slept outdoors, I believe. And the guy who was holding the phone was still holding it, still looking in that direction, saying, you know, come back, come back, come back, come back. And he turned to me and he said, you know, they're coming right back. And I turned to him, and I, for whatever reason, I just said, no, it's not coming back. They're not coming back. It's over. Can't you feel it? You know, and I'm kind of feeling it now, Preston, just relating the story, because it's hard not to talk about it without getting kind of emotionally involved. But it was that strong a sense. I just turned to him and said, no, there's no point in staying here another minute. They're not coming back, and it's over.
Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Jonathan Fox, and we're talking about UFOs over Catalina Island. He's told us this very interesting story about how 11 of them have seen this three lights for over a period of 2.5 hours, and they were apparently chased away by jets. Now, it's the aftermath, Jonathan, of this story, which is also, I mean, very interesting. And I mean, as two of these witnesses were walking down away from the camp, didn't one of them look up and see something as well?
Yes, we didn't find that out till afterwards when we were all comparing notes. But the couple that went down below, as I recall, I don't know if she was looking up in the sky because she was pretty upset at the time, but he was looking up and stumbling the whole way back down to their campsite. And he told us afterwards that while we were experiencing whatever it was shooting around us, he apparently was seeing it from the other side of the fog, because he said he looked up in the sky and saw the stars get blanketed out as if a giant shadow, you know, had come across them. No sound, but the sky got pitch dark as if something was between them and the starlight, and then continued to move. The shadow did move over them, which added to their fear level, from what I understand.
Right.
We didn't experience that. You know, they were in a different spot at the same time. So we didn't experience it from that point of view. But when we compared notes later, we did find out that was the case. Because once it was all over, slowly but surely, we packed up all our party gear and dragged ourselves back down to camp. And that's when we found out that it was, you know, 10 o'clock at night, or I think 11 o'clock at night, because we were all stunned that 2.5 hours had gone by. I don't mean to suggest that we felt that we had lost any time or missing time or anything like that. It didn't appear to be missing. It just was shocking to us that it had gone on for so long. We knew we went from daylight to darkness and that we had experienced a lot packed in, but 2.5 hours, we were really stunned.
Well, missing time remains a possibility. I mean, that's not something you can rule out, right?
That's kind of a scary theory.
Right, right.
That's kind of scary. We kind of wandered around in the days afterwards as a group. You know, normally what our tradition was to go up to this spot, watch sunset, you know, and have a cocktail or do whatever, watch our sunset, and then go back down to camp and make dinner and have, you know, our roaring fire and do, that's what we did on our trips to Catalina. So this time, you know, we got back to camp, it was 11 o'clock at night, and we realized we hadn't eaten, and we hadn't made a fire, and we hadn't done any of those things. The whole night had been basically devoted to this bizarre experience. So we proceeded to make a fire and start dinner. But we were all, Preston, really kind of like zombies, you know? There wasn't a lot of conversation going on. We were all very wrapped up, I think, in our own thought processes. And we just went through the motions of making the fire and putting dinner up and even getting it to the table and sitting down to eat it, all 11 of us. And I was lost in my own world because I realized, as I was sitting at the table, that I was taking chicken and putting it in my mouth and chewing it and not swallowing and taking it out, bite by bite, and putting it on my plate. I realized this after a period of time, and looking down and seeing all this, like, pre-chewed food on my plate, and I looked around, and everybody was doing the same thing. None of us could really swallow, for whatever that's worth. None of us felt comfortable swallowing. And we weren't talking. We were just going through the motions of eating, but not actually consuming the food. And one by one drifted off to our various tents, with the exception of me and two other people in the group who stayed around the campfire all night long looking up into the sky, talking very, very little, but looking up into the sky until the sun came up that next day. And in fact, somebody down at camp who tried to take a picture with a battery that worked just fine took a flash picture of me, because I still have it, and it was kind of a candid. I wasn't posing for a picture. They just took a picture of me and one of the other girls in the group, and I have this totally weird look on my face, and I'm staring up in the sky as if I'm, you know, in Poltergeist or something. It really, from beginning to end, was a very dramatic, very kind of cinematic, you know, overwhelming experience that changed our lives individually and as a group forever. It's changed our lives, and it's still with me today, clearly. My license plate says UFOs exist, so it did thrust me into that whole world, and I seem to be having a renaissance now. There seems to be so much interest in the subject, and that's how I came to see you on TV and opened up to you, and here I am talking about it now, actually publicly.
Yeah, so most of the other people have not talked about this.
No, and in fact, we made a pact as a group. We all met together. The first couple of weeks afterwards were very intense for all of us. There was a lot of emotion involved, people breaking down, myself included, crying for no reason whatsoever, and looking over our shoulder and just being generally paranoid and thinking about whether we should talk about it or not. We all got together at my house a week later as a group and made a pact within our own structure to not discuss it with anybody. We were too afraid of how people would react. And in fact, I didn't tell anybody. I wanted to tell my mother desperately, and it took me over a year to tell her.
Wow.
Yeah, we made a pact to not discuss it, and apparently I've broken that pact 27 years later. I feel safer now. I'm far removed from the situation.
Right, right. Well, it's amazing how much this sighting affected all of you. I mean, it transformed your lives to a certain degree. Would you say that's a fair statement?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it did spark an interest in all of us, I know, to explore, even if it's just within our own minds, the possibilities of what could be out there that we are unaware of. We seem to take it for granted that we know the answers to everything. And, you know, in the 27 years since then, I certainly have found personally that we don't know the answer to anything. Some of us in the group went off into spiritual healing awareness. One of the guys in the group wound up writing a manifesto about UFOs and extraterrestrials. He just went off on his own for a couple of years and wrote this, like, you know, a 2,000-page manifesto about the very same thing. One of the guys, who was an artist, got very into artwork that was all involved with otherworldly or extraterrestrial or UFO-related kind of artwork. My writing... took on a whole different tone, and still to this day, when I sit down to write something, whether it's a play or a short story or a screenplay, it always goes back to the paranormal experience in one way or another. So it certainly has colored my world, and that's why I have the license plates that I do, because we didn't want to discuss it openly with people or be ridiculed in any way, and just wanted to keep it to ourselves for so long, and only recently have discovered other people having very similar experiences in the same place, even at the same time. You know, we didn't know any of this then.
Well, you found another witness later on, right? Or you heard of other people in the area?
It took quite a while to even get a hold of anybody to talk to. As I said, that's when I discovered the fact that the Mutual UFO Network existed. The first thing I did was call. We wanted to remain totally anonymous, but I needed to know. You know, I was on a mission, a need-to-know basis. So I called the Griffith Park Observatory. That was the first place I called, and I didn't know where else to turn to ask them who one would contact if one wanted to know anything about UFOs anywhere in California.
Okay, well, we have a caller, if you'd like.
Okay.
My question is, what was the purpose of the pact that you made not to talk about this?
The purpose of the pact,
than having people not think that you were completely insane.
That really was the motivation behind it all, was that it was so dramatic, and there is no way to describe it other than in that way that... honestly, a couple of us in the group You know, we were all young performers involved with, several of us were involved with the entertainment industry. A couple of people in the group have gone on to some nice success and had some even at that point in this business, and they certainly didn't want to be exposed in any way and wouldn't want to be today.
Wouldn't want
to be today. So part of it is protecting them, I think.
I'm afraid I interrupted you telling about contacting the observatory. Was that it?
Yeah, I called the observatory, and they're the ones who gave me the number for the Mutual UFO Network. And our basic problem was that I wanted information from them, but I didn't want to give them any information about us. So it made it difficult. But apparently there was a couple, young man and woman, in Long Beach on the same night at the same time seeing the same thing going on over the water between them and Catalina Island because they called and reported it to the Mutual UFO Network as well, which
and
corroborated for us.
And did you make contact with them?
I'm sorry?
Did you talk to that other couple?
No. No, it would be interesting to know who they were and talk to them today.
Yeah.
No, it never even occurred to us, I think, to try and do that.
Thank you.
Oddly enough. Today I would be very interested in talking with them, I'm sure.
Do you have any other questions then? All right, do we have any other callers on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi there. Is this Preston and Jonathan?
It is.
I have a question. Did anyone in your group have any physiological response to the sighting and the experience?
It's a good question. It turns out, as we were still on Catalina after this for another day and a night, so we did have time to at least try and process some of this information and get to a point where we were talking about it amongst ourselves. And physiologically, it turned out as we were comparing notes the next day, all of the women spontaneously got their period, all at the same time. So once they started comparing notes about that, we thought that was interesting. And actually, we did have a common physiological experience. It's not a pleasant one, but we all did kind of excrete some greenish material in the day or two or three following that, and we did all compare notes about that as well, which kind of freaked us out. when we did get a hold of the Center for UFO Studies, they got to a point where they wanted to examine us physically, and we were still trying to retain total anonymity, and that's when we cut off all contact with them, when they heard that this had happened. And oddly enough, it's such an interesting question, and I haven't really thought about it in a long time because we did fill out those official reports. But one of the questions asked of us by one of those two organizations, they had a whole list of questions that apparently is compiled out of thousands of reports that they get. One of the questions was, did any of the women get their period? Which
well, this
I thought
is a common experience, huh?
I had no idea. But all of the women did, and they all owned up to it.
Huh.
So the answer is yes, we did have that going on. Again, is that a reaction to a shock, you know, kind of experience? I don't know the answers to those things.
I don't know. It makes
very
me feel
interesting.
Like
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. It makes me think that it might have been more than a sighting, these types of things, you know what I mean?
Well, I know, Preston, you like to leap to those kinds of conclusions that scare, you know, the living daylights out of me. So I can let you go there, but I don't have to go there in my mind.
No, you don't.
it's enough that it had people over the years, certainly, you know, in the research that I have done between then and now, have suggested all sorts of scenarios that could have been going on, given the timeline. And, you know, like this woman just asked this question, you know, it wouldn't have occurred to me to relay that in the telling of the story, but since she asked, that is the answer to that question. So,
right. Well, I think we might have another caller. Do we have any other callers on the line? No? All right. Just wanted to check because we had quite a flood there for a second, which is always nice. Love to hear from the listeners. So, but yeah,
that's
we're
kind of cool. I've never done anything like this before.
We've only got like 3 or 4 minutes left. So is there anything else, I mean, you want people to know about?
And I mentioned it briefly before, you know, I discovered you because of this whole theory that something might be going on in or around the waters of Catalina Island, and it never occurred to me until this past year when all this came up that we never did actually see these things take off in the sky. You know, usually reports of UFOs, people say, well, we saw it. You know, it flew into our periphery for however long, and then it zoomed away again. These three things went under the fog layer, and to me it always seemed like they were, you know, just kind of ducking away from the aircraft. But we did hover there for a little while. We never saw them shoot off into the sky. So you doing all this investigating about USOs and the possibility of submerged objects, again, it had never occurred to me, but it does pose a question when you think about it, because we never saw them come up. We never, you know, we just became aware of them. They were in the sky. We don't know whether they came from above or below, and they did sink down and never return in our sight. So it's kind of an interesting question.
Right. Well, that's my theory question. Is that there is some sort of a base there, or at least that they're using this area to hide, or I don't know exactly, but there's just so much activity. I mean, there was a film taken right over this area where you guys saw this.
Well, that I discovered in later years, this film that has never been shot down, no pun intended. It's never been proven to be a fake, that was done in 1968. And I believe by a press photographer or something, correct me if I'm wrong, but somebody
involved. Military guy, definitely.
Navy, yeah. A Navy press photographer, I think, shot this little 8mm video, and when I saw it, I was stunned. I saw it on a UFO special because it says over Catalina Island, and it looks as if it's exactly where we were all those years later. And then fast forward to learning about this guy who had the plane crash UFO sighting off the coast of Catalina Island. And when they mapped that out, it was in the exact same spot that we were on Catalina Island.
Wow.
And that was 1980. Our experience was 82, and the film footage is from 68. All of this, of course, I've learned since then.
Well, Jonathan, we have another call.
Hi, John.
Hello?
Hi, John. I'm calling from Los Angeles. Remember this voice?
Like being on whose license it anyway?
Once again with the phone in my hand.
Oh, my God.
Yes, it is.
So we have somebody on the line, then, who was there at this very evening that we're talking about. Is that correct?
Yes, I was holding the phone, and it had a profound effect on my life. I think it did all of us. And
you and I have not spoken. How many years has it been since you and I have spoken? Wow, that's pretty wild. So you can corroborate my story, then? Is that what you're saying?
I'm telling you, I'm sitting here in awe how you could remember every single detail. And it brought back such memories that I almost started shivering again.
Wow, man.
It,
this is pretty intense.
So
amazing.
Good
so
hearing
you
talk
there.
About it. And this whole underground theory, I mean, that's something I had never heard before. And
isn't
because
that wild?
I remember so well when they disappeared. It was weird how they disappeared. You know, I remember that so vividly.
Yeah, because I'm so amazed by the fact that you've called in, and of course I'm not using your name to protect you, but I do know who you are. And you were there, and you and I have not seen each other in many, many years, but they did go down below that level of the fog layer, is that correct?
Yeah.
That's how you remember it as well, they kind of sank below.
I can remember that night like it happened yesterday. It just burned into my mind.
Yeah, I can understand why.
I rarely, I couldn't even think the last time I've talked to anybody about it, because people look at it like you're crazy.
Of course. You know, well, you must have been quite shocked that here I am doing it on the radio.
Well, I saw a friend's email. I'll respond to it, so you have mine, too. And
yeah, I certainly didn't email you. I had no idea how to get a hold of you.
Yes, well, I got it from Dietrich. So it's just been absolutely wonderful rehearing that. I still have in my office the painting or the drawing that Peter made of that evening.
Really?
And one detail I don't think you mentioned, that we all independently realized we were sketching out things on paper, like we'd be at work for the next week or two. Remember that? And
I'm sort of remembering it now that you're mentioning it. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it.
Yeah.
We did all make sketches that MUFON had. They did have the sketches because I saw them in this past year, and that's why I was saying I was so shocked by how similar they all were. Because I don't know if you remember, we collected all of them and sent them to somebody because they still have them.
Oh, and I remember how cold we got. Shivering.
Well, I think it's absolutely amazing that you have called in and corroborated the crazy man's story. That is really cool.
I was one of them that was more excited than frightened. So, you know, it was good to hear all that again.
I remember.
It really brings back a...
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I recall, you had kind of that childlike, awestruck wonder thing going on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was just a kid from Nebraska. What did I know? And here this was happening. I mean, and you know, I think we all were really trying to convince ourselves that it wasn't happening. I mean,
exactly.
We were excited that it was, but it was like, this can't be real, you know.
Right.
This just doesn't happen in real world. But it does, and I hope that I get to have that experience again someday in my life.
No, from your mouth to God's ears. I'm so amazed by the fact that you called in, and I hope you now you somehow have a way to get a hold of me. I don't want to give information out over the air, but you must have a way to. Somebody must in our group must.
Yes.
Must have my email address.
Dietrich got your email, so I'll write you. But it's wonderful
Terrific.
Hearing your voice.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful hearing yours. And what's best of all out of this entire experience is somebody totally unexpectedly who was there calling in and saying, I was there. That's just the most amazing thing I could have ever asked for. So I thank you for that.
All right. Well, we'll be in touch. Good hearing.
Thank you, sir. I'll look forward to that.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Wow, Jonathan, there you go.
Preston,
huh?
I am blown away. I am blown away. This is somebody that I have not seen in 14, 15 years.
Well, you know what? Our time is pretty much up. It's been a great hour, Jonathan. Wow, you've got an amazing story to tell. And so I really want to thank you for sharing it with me and everyone who's listening.
It's been my pleasure. You know, I mean, it is now, as I said, there is a resurgence in the interest and a resurgence in my own personal life in interest in the subject matter. I'm hoping to get involved with the community up here and see what's going on. So the story goes on, apparently.
Wow, it sure does.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's it. Thank you very much, Jonathan, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. I'll look forward to it.
Well, everyone, that's our show tonight. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our show tonight has been about UFOs over Catalina. Our guest has been Jonathan Fox, and he was one of the witnesses there who experienced this event, and an amazing story. I hope you all enjoyed it very much, and I hope you can join us next week when we have another exciting guest to talk about UFOs and the paranormal. Until then, keep your eyes in the skies.